This is Jim Inkster. Coming today on the show, we are slated to visit with Ron Eckerman, tour manager for Lynyrd Skynyrd, when the band went down in 1977 on the 20th day of October en route to LSU for a concert at the Assembly Center. Ron Eckerman remembers Lynyrd Skynyrd, a band that has endured since the death that day of lead singer Ronnie Van Zant. Also, Bob Edgar, former congressman, president and CEO of Common Cause on the most expensive presidential election ever. 2.5 weeks to go, and it's a tight race between President Obama and Governor Romney. Carlos Sam, director of innovative and specialized programs at the East Baton Rouge Parish School System, is slated to stop by, as is Darlene Rowland from Red Stick Farmers Market. All this today, but first the news on 89.3 WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge, 877-217-5757 if you're calling outside the area, and locally 297-5713. And, 297-5633. Off to an inauspicious start, says Kevin Gallagher, but we have a great guest to begin our conversation. If you'd like to reach us online, it is InksterShow at WRKF.org. Those numbers again, 297-5633 and 877-217-5757. Our guest is Ron Eckerman. He was tour manager for Lynyrd Skynyrd, the legendary American band that was en route to LSU on October 20th, 1977, 35 years ago, and the plane they were on crashed in Mississippi, near the Louisiana border, near Macomb, Mississippi, and Ron was on board. The crash took the life of the lead singer, Ronnie Van Zant, who is still popular to this day, perhaps more popular than ever. Ron Eckerman, his book about the life and times of Lynyrd Skynyrd is called Turn It Up. Good morning, Ron.
Good morning. It's really good to be here.
Well, as I stated, you were en route to Baton Rouge October 20th, which would be tomorrow, 35 years ago. Hard to believe it's been 3.5 decades, but it has. What do you recall about that harrowing day?
You know, I don't... We had a hard time that day. It started bad. I do recover everything up until a crash. And that morning started off bad. We didn't have the cars didn't show up to pick us up. Normally we have cars provided, and they didn't show. It was a no-show. So we had to call every taxi in the town and arrange our own transportation to get to the airport. Then Artemis Powell, the drummer, was about an hour late arriving at the plane. So we sat on the tarmac with the engines running, and all of that contributed to the fact that we ran out of fuel. It was not a mechanical problem, although we did have a mechanical problem that caused one of the engines to run rich. But we simply ran out of fuel on that day, and it was a very unfortunate accident.
This was one of the great bands in America then, and of course since then, Lynyrd Skynyrd has taken a life of its own, but how in the world would you be on a plane that didn't have enough fuel?
Yeah, well, it was, you don't fill up planes. You don't just fill them up. The pilots have to calculate how much fuel they're going to need, plus a good safety margin, and they miscalculated, I think, for two or three days in a row, which ran us short, and then we sat on the tarmac waiting for Artemis for an hour, so that ran us even more short, plus the engine was running rich, so there was cumulative errors there that ran to our, that led to the fact that we ran out of fuel.
How many were on board?
There was 24 people on board, and that included the band, the crew, two pilots, and a photographer from Time magazine that was out shooting pics.
And how many died?
And there were 6 deaths, both pilots. Ronnie Van Zant, our singer, and you know, probably one of the most talented lyricists in rock history. Steve Gaines, a remarkable guitarist that had just joined us. He'd been with us for about a year and was responsible for a lot of the songs that were on the Street Survivors album. His sister, Cassie Gaines, who was the backup singer, and the one that really forced us to audition Steve, her brother, and my personal assistant, Dean Kilpatrick.
Where was Ronnie Van Zant seated in the plane?
He was up in the front cabin, and most of the, in fact, all of the deaths happened with people in the front of the plane. Artemis Pyle, which is very strange, he wasn't even strapped into a seat in the right before the crash. He couldn't find a seat. There was one there for him, but he couldn't find it. So he sat down on the cabin floor in the rear of the plane and rode out the crash without a seat belt, without a seat. And he was the only guy that walked out of that crash.
Where were you?
I was in the rear of the plane. I was involved in our nonstop poker game, and I didn't think we were going to crash. Anyway, Les Long, our previous pilot, and he'd been flying that plane for years with Jerry Lee Lewis. And he had told me numerous times that that was one of the safest planes ever made, had a great glide ratio, said if you weren't in a forest or you weren't in mountains, it can be put down safely. And I was looking out the window when we started having trouble, and I saw an open highway, a forest, and an open field. And my thought process the whole time as we were going down, which we glided down, it wasn't an abrupt sinking, I thought, we're going to look awful silly, 25 people, 24 people, hitchhiking down this freeway with a plane parked on it that's out of gas. You know, that was my thought process all the way down until we started hitting the trees.
Did the pilot just not see the trees?
You never know what somebody's going to do in a crisis, in a panic, and I don't think, you know, without the hydraulic power, it's a little bit hard to turn a plane. At the same time, you know, it has been done before and it can be done. But I think their whole thing was, I think they were in a bit of a panic, didn't really know what to do, and just kept on going straight, you know. You know, it was very unfortunate. And the thing that's the most unfortunate about it is it could have been prevented. So.
And it took six lives, including that of Ronnie Van Zant, who at 29, my goodness, what would he have done?
I know it. You know, he was very prophetic, though. If you read the book, he quite often, he said to his the people around him that were closest to him, he believed he would not live to be 30. And he was quite adamant about that. I will not live to be 30. You know, this is it. So we crashed 3 months before his birthday. You know, and there were other things that, the album was called Street Survivors. The tour was Tour of the Survivors. They had that famous song, That Smell, on the album. There were all these things that made it very eerie, very ironic that we crashed. And, you know, the Tour of the Survivors is the one tour we didn't survive. So.
And the album, which had just been released when you had the crash, had the band in flames.
Exactly. That's the other thing, that album cover, you know. It's very strange. Everything pointed to a disaster. Everything. And nobody could see it.
Well, what was the genesis, Ron Eckerman, of Lynyrd Skynyrd?
You know, the guys, after the crash, you know, I joined them 2 years out of their four-year career, and it was 4 years from the very first release. So I joined them 2 years, and I don't know things that happened previous to that firsthand, so I just stay away from that stuff. I only talk about the stuff that
You were with the band.
Afterwards. Right, I was with the band halfway through the career.
Probably right after Sweet Home Alabama was released.
Yeah, actually, I joined them right after the Give Me Back My Bullets album was released.
All right.
That's exactly when I joined them. So, you know, I was there right after Ed King had left the band.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was a two-guitar band at that time.
And the band Ron, was named after a high school phys ed teacher, right?
That is correct. A guy named Lynyrd Skynyrd. And he was the guy that made them cut their hair in gym class. And they had their band going back then. It wasn't called Leonard Skinner, I think it was called 1% or something like that. But I'm not really an authority on, you know, things that happened previous to me, but I do know these stories. So they got upset with this guy, and they said, well, we're going to name the band Leonard Skinner, kind of a punch at him. And he went on, by the way, to make a lot of money out of the name, and you know, he became a huge real estate agent there in Jacksonville.
297-5633 for Ron Eckerman with us a bit longer. His book about Leonard Skinner is Turn It Up. He was on the plane in 1977, 35 years ago this Saturday, that took six lives in a crash, including that of the lead singer, the brilliant Ronnie Van Zant. Dorothy in Goodwood, please be brief. Dorothy, you're on with Ron Eckerman.
Do you know that I still have my tickets for that concert? It just blew me away when I found out about the plane crash. I still have, you know, a lot of grief about that. So I just wanted to let you know that I kept my tickets, and I still have them.
That's pretty awesome. You know, it touched a lot of people's lives, and everybody that was of age, you know, from teenagers on up, at that time, they remember exactly what they were doing, and there's a lot of, it's surprising how many people did hang on to things, you know, ticket stubs and things.
And so, the band had a reunion tour in 1991 that began at LSU, the place where you were supposed to start, or supposed to play the night that the plane went down. How have you been affiliated with the band since the plane crash, Ron?
Well, they all, you know, I got sued by everybody that was on the plane after the crash, and it took 2 years to settle that, so we didn't talk for 2 years. And then after I was cleared completely, we got back together. I helped Gary Rosington put a band together. I helped helped out with the Rosington Collins band and helped out with the tribute tour band, you know, that finally became the band that is touring today. Now, I have some problems with it personally, in that I think Leonard Skinner died with Ronnie Van Zant. But at the same time, I have to tip my hat to the guys out there. They've got a great band. It's certainly not the original band. But, you know, they play that music better than anybody in the world can. And Gary Rosington's still out there doing his thing.
I heard somebody on one of the shows on National Public Radio recently say that in the state of Alabama, there were three gods, Bear Bryant, George Wallace, and Leonard Skinner.
There you go. That makes a lot of sense. It really does. You know, I mean, they are, you know, it's a legend. I'm not sure that the present Leonard Skinner is really advancing the legendary Leonard Skinner. You know, it's kind of two different things to me. But like I say, you know, Johnny's great, and Gary's still doing his thing. It's a great band, but, you know, that legendary Skinner that's the big one, you know.
On that fateful day, you were just cruising along. How was the weather that day?
It was nice. You know, it was a good day. There was no storms, all right, we went through a lot of storms in that plane, made it through fine, you know, heavy winds, big thunderstorms, never any problem. But, you know, the day before, on the last flight we had, we experienced a backfire, and that scared everybody. And that's what caused the attention. We had mechanics looking at the plane, the pilots, and, you know, we had a part that was waiting for us in Baton Rouge and a mechanic to install a new part that would have kept the engines from running so rich. So, you know, we were right there. I don't know how far we were. It's anywhere from 10 to 30 minutes from Baton Rouge, I'm not sure. But, you know, it would have been problem solved had we made it.
We'll return for a few more minutes with Ron Eckerman. He was tour manager for Leonard Skinner 35 years ago when the Great Southern Band went down in flames and the life of Ronnie Van Zant was taken in a plane crash near Macomb, Mississippi. 297-5633. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Ron Eckerman, who is the was the tour manager for Lynyrd Skynyrd when the band had its infamous plane crash in near Macon, Mississippi, 35 years ago tomorrow. And he has written about his life and times with the band, including the plane crash in Turn It Up. Scott in St. Francisville, please be brief. Scott, you're on the air.
A couple of things you hadn't touched on yet is that in the new band, Rodney Van Zandt's kid brother is taking over his lead vocals. And the original band had a part of our history was opening for the Rolling Stones, I think in 74 or 5, something like that.
All right. Is that right, Ron?
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the question.
First thing he asked was about Ronnie's brother and his involvement in the band.
Right.
And the second was about whether Lynyrd Skynyrd ever opened for the Rolling Stones.
Yes, we opened for the Rolling Stones in Nebworth, England, and we blew the doors off the Stones. It was an amazing show. 300,000 people. And the Stones wouldn't go on for about 4 hours because they wanted the crowd to cool down. And then as far as Johnny Van Zandt, he's the youngest brother of Ronnie, and he's taken over the singing role for the present Lynyrd Skynyrd, and we worked with Johnny back when he had the Johnny Van Zandt band back in the 70s. So our management company also handled them.
Hippolyte in Mid-City. Good morning, Hippolyte. You're on with Ron Eckerman.
Good morning, Jim. How are you, sir?
Fine.
Good. Good morning, Mr. Eckerman. My deepest sympathy to you, sir, concerning you and your colleagues many, many years ago, and I enjoyed Mr. Skynyrd when he was singing. As a pilot, I have a question for you. From where did you depart, and what kind of airplane was it?
We were going from Greensboro to Baton Rouge, and that was a Convair N540. So it was a turboprop.
That's hard to believe that he couldn't control the fuel from that short of a distance. But my deepest sympathy to you, I just wanted to know. I remember vaguely the crash because I've been a pilot for 50 years. But, Jim, I missed you at my party, buddy. Sorry you didn't make
it. Well, I look forward to seeing you soon, Hippolyte. And belated happy 85th?
86th birthday, Jim.
Yeah, 86. That's why I missed it. I thought you were 85.
I will make it next year.
God bless you. Thank
you. My deepest sympathy, Mr. Eckerman, to you, sir.
Right. Thank you very much. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Jim. Right. Goodbye.
Thank you, Hippolyte. Mike Hebert writes, two of my all-time favorite Lynyrd Skynyrd songs are The Ballad of Curtis Lowe and Simple Man. Can you tell me about how and why those songs were written? Ron, do you have the inside poop on that?
I don't have the insight. Those were written before I was with the band. They're great songs. I feel the same way. Curtis Lowe was a fictional. I do know that Curtis Lowe was a fictional character that Ronnie created for that song. Simple Man, I don't really know the story behind it. I'm not really a historian on the band. You know, what I put in my book is firsthand accounts of what happened when I was with them.
Well, it's quite a book from Ron Eckerman, Turn It Up, about the life and times of Lynyrd Skynyrd. The subtitle is Love, Life, and Death, Southern Style. Thank you, Ron. Good to visit with you today.
Thank you very much.
Take care.
I'll talk to you guys soon.
My pleasure. And before we segue to Bob Edgar, one of the most articulate people who's involved in American politics, the head of Common Cause, Kevin Gallagher notes that the comeback tour began in 1991, in July of 91, at the old Centralplex in the River Center. And one of the main components of that concert was an introduction by none other than Kevin Gallagher, who not only introduced Lynyrd Skynyrd when the band made its comeback in Baton Rouge, but where were you on the afternoon of October 20th, 1977?
I was worried you were going to ask me about this. I was driving home from a trip to Florida. It was an adventure. It was my first solo drive to anywhere. I was driving back to Natchez, Mississippi from Florida. I was passing through Wiggins, Mississippi, and as it turns out, I reconstructed this afterwards from news, but I was only a couple of miles from where that plane went down. The road that Ron said he saw was probably the road that I was on because there was an open field on the other side of the road and trees on the right side. It was wild. I was very close.
And Kevin would have been all of 19, 18 years old.
18. Just turned 18.
Years old. Thank you, Kevin. Mm-hmm. And we're joined now by Bob Edgar, President and CEO of Common Cause, former U.S. Congressman, six terms in Pennsylvania in the 7th Congressional District, and former General Secretary for the National Council of the Churches of Christ, USA, and ordained minister. Good morning, Congressman Edgar.
Good morning. It's great to be with you today.
Well, we're 2.5 weeks, 18 days away from November 6th, and it's going to be one thing's for sure. We may not know the outcome, but we know it'll be the most expensive campaign ever. What does that mean as far as the process and how elections are conducted in this country?
Well, my friend Bill Moyer says this is the most dangerous moment in American history. We're either going to be a nation that's of and by and for the people, or of and by and for large corporations and the wealthy. And we've seen this. Obama's raising $1 billion. Romney's raising $1 billion. And there'll be $3 billion spent this election by the super PACs. That's all the results of the Supreme Court decision, Citizens United. But money isn't the only thing that we're worried about in this election. In the 08 election, we discovered a lot of deceptive practices. In my home city of Philadelphia, they were using robocalls, telling people in the black and Hispanic neighborhoods if you had a traffic ticket or hadn't paid your child support, you'd be arrested. In Denver, we caught them doing robocalls in Spanish, telling Hispanic voters that because of the pressure of voting, just tell us who you're voting for and you don't have to come to the polls. In Virginia, we caught a guy who was passing around literature that said because of the pressure of voting, Republicans vote on Tuesday and Democrats vote on Wednesday. So Common Cause has been working with a whole coalition of partners this fall to try to make sure that this election isn't stolen. It's going to be a close election. We think that every voter should be not only eligible to vote, but know that their vote will count. We don't support or oppose any candidate, but we believe that America should be free and our voting should be free, fair, and accessible. So this is going to be a busy time for Common Cause and our partners. We're going to try to get the word out. We've got a toll-free number called 1-866-OUR-VOTE, and we're trying to get the message across that this is the election protection hotline, and any time between now and the election, this hotline will be staffed by people taking calls from all over the country, helping people who go to the polls and find that their name isn't on the registration list, and sometimes they have been deleted, some by accident and a lot by on purpose. We want to help senior citizens and poor people know what their rights are at the polling places. We've got some election monitors out there who are just gently helping people answer questions at the polls. But if people have problems, they should call 1-866-OUR-VOTE.
Well, what do you attribute this so-called ballot box bullying to?
Well, if folks are interested, on the Common Cause website is the report we just did, which has gotten national attention, called Bullies at the Ballot Box. And we attribute it to the closeness of the elections in the last few years, going back even further than the contest between George W. Bush and Al Gore in 2000. There are at stake is not only the presidential race, but Senate and all the House races that are up. The nation has been divided for 20, 30 years, far more seriously than when I ran for Congress. I served 12 years, and my best friends were moderate Republicans who, once elected, worked with moderate to progressive Democrats to solve our problems. But since about 1994, we've seen a lot of one-issue candidates elected and a lot more partisanship. So I think we're in trouble as a nation. We need to get back to having our elected officials serve the public interest and not the special interest. I think we have to limit and control money in politics, and the Supreme Court has done a great deal of damage over the last 2 years in terms of who can buy politicians and buy elections. The fact that the Supreme Court voted narrowly 5-4 indicates that there is an opportunity for us to push back on that decision, reverse it. Common Cause, for example, has qualified in Montana and Colorado so that when the voters go to vote, they'll have a statewide referendum in those two states pushing back on Citizens United, calling on their House and Senate members to work on a constitutional amendment. And we're working with a coalition that includes some folks in the Los Angeles area that passed local resolutions in cities and towns across the nation. More than 350 cities have instructed their congresspeople to work on a constitutional amendment.
297-5633 is your number, 877-217-5757 outside the area. And our guest at this time is Bob Edgar, President, CEO of Common Cause, six-term congressman from Pennsylvania and former general secretary for the National Council of the Churches of Christ. Here's a quote in yesterday's Wall Street Journal from Reverend Billy Graham. He says, the legacy we leave behind for our children, grandchildren, and this great nation is crucial. As I approach my 94th birthday, I realize this election could be my last. I believe it is vitally important that we cast our ballots for candidates who base their decisions on biblical principles and support the nation of Israel. I urge you to vote for those who protect the sanctity of life and support the biblical definition of marriage between a man and a woman. Vote for biblical values this November 6th and pray with me that America will remain one nation under God. What do you think of this, Reverend Congressman Bob Edgar?
I'm appalled at statements like that. Billy Graham has had a rich history over time, but I think particularly the Christian right and some of the evangelical fervor of people like Billy Graham often confuse. He should be putting out a statement urging people to vote, to use their conscience to vote. It's not bad for him to say, use your faith statement as you go to vote. But he steps over the line when he starts giving specific policies there. I believe in the separation of church and state. I don't believe in the separation of people of faith and institutions of government. We're a nation that used to persecute individuals because they weren't Protestants or they weren't Catholics. But we learned from that, and our founding fathers and mothers made sure that we had a pluralistic system where we respect all religion. And so I want Christians, Jews, Muslims, conservatives, moderates, and liberals to go to the polls, to vote, to be constructive. I don't want any church or part of a church or a theological position within a church to think they can dictate our policies.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Congressman Edgar.
Yes. Do you believe one of the problems is legislators becoming lobbyists for the industries from which they previously received contributions?
Absolutely. am I still on the air?
You are.
Good. Yeah, absolutely. We have the what I call the Billy Toven problem. He was a member of Congress who worked with the Bush administration.
From Louisiana.
Louisiana. And he helped pass the drug bill for senior citizens, walked across the street, resigned from Congress, walked across the street, and got a multi-million dollar salary from the pharmaceutical companies who gained billions of dollars from that legislative decision. Common Cause supports having a buffer zone between a congressman or a senator when they leave office. It should be at least 2 years. Unfortunately, some of the House and Senate members have gotten around that. While they don't show up as hardcore lobbyists, they do affiliate with lobbying firms. They sit in the office. They put their name on the door and the outside of these K Street lobbying firms. I believe that members of Congress should, in fact, be productive citizens after they leave Congress.
Now, in the case of Congressman Tozan, he ended up supporting Obamacare when he was head of the pharmaceutical group, and much to the chagrin of his fellow Republicans. Is it necessarily a case where the person's selling their soul when they do this sort of thing?
Well, I think some of the House and Senate members do good, some do damage to our system. I think Billy tried to redeem himself by his work on Obamacare, but he realized that the pharmaceutical industry and the insurance industry is going to gain a lot of new people to cover, and they're going to make a lot of money if we reform our health care system. And so when Obamacare was passed, he was supportive. But I think the larger issue that was raised by the listener is, why should congressmen gain advantage because of their position? Last year, when 60 Minutes showed congresspeople benefiting from their stock portfolios because of insider information, Congress quickly passed a bill to try to prevent that. And then in the fine print on pages, you know, in the back pages of the newspapers, it was revealed that coming up on this election, the Congress put off working to make sure that that Stock Act was put in place and monitored and used.
HB in Denham Springs. HB, you're on with Bob Edgar.
Good morning, gentlemen. The question I have is, it goes along with a statement. Most of the talk shows that, like particular Sunday morning, have this election so close that either candidate could win the popular vote and still lose at the Electoral College. What do you think of this system and considering voter turnout being heavy or light? Thank you, sir.
What about the prospect of a split decision like we had in 2000?
I think that's a danger for us, given the partisanship that we've seen in recent elections. Common Cause supports a moving effort called National Popular Vote. We're pleased that California passed an initiative, and if enough states pass the initiative for the process where the electors, rather than voting each state for whoever they want for president, that when the Electoral College meets, they would vote for that person who's won the popular vote. And we're getting close to having enough states sign an interstate compact. You don't have to change the Constitution. You just have to get states that make up 271 electoral votes to agree that the person who wins the popular vote actually will get elected. Common Cause supports that. Many states are dealing with that in the legislative process. And my hope is that we can quickly get to the point where the person who wins the popular... Here's how it would change things for California. Right now, the candidates don't care about California except to come in and raise money. They put all of their billions of dollars into the battleground states. They go to Pennsylvania. They go to Ohio. They go to Florida. If we had a national popular vote, then they would spread out across the country.
We'll return for a few more minutes with Reverend and Congressman Bob Edgar, president of Common Cause, after this one-minute timeout on WRKF. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. A few more minutes with Reverend and Congressman Bob Edgar, president of Common Cause. Reverend Randy and Zachary, you're on with Bob Edgar. Good morning, Randy.
Good morning, Jim. Good morning, Mr. Edgar. My question, sir, is do you see any long-term damage being done to voters with the voter suppression laws that have been offered up by the various states during this election? Thank you.
Absolutely. There have been major efforts, particularly by the conservative side of the House over the many years, but accelerated over the last couple of years, to suppress the vote. We've seen ID laws spread across the country. There's a group called the American Legislative Exchange Council, ALEC, that has been working throughout the state legislatures And most of ALEC is made up of conservative state legislators, and they're trying to limit the vote because they realize if everybody votes, particularly poor people, people of color, senior citizens, students, those demographics tend to lean more towards the Democratic candidates than the Republican candidates. And Common Cause, working with a coalition of organizations, are trying to push back on that. In fact, the courts have helped us in this area in many states where ID laws were put in place. Pennsylvania is a good example. The courts have pushed back and said, no, 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 that's not fair for people. You can't impose restrictive ID laws. Now, most people carry a driver's license, but take my mother, who's 88 years old. If she was still living in our home in Pennsylvania, she hasn't driven for years. She has no interest in traveling on airplanes. She doesn't have a qualified picture ID, but she's voted at the same place year after year. She should not be hassled at the polling places.
Jacoby and Karen Crow. Jacoby, you're on with Bob Edgar. Hi, Jacoby.
Hi. And as to reforming the Electoral College, I think one of the simplest solutions would be to go to the system used in Maine and Nebraska, where if you win in that congressional district, then you get the vote from that congressional district.
All right. What about a proportional voting process like Maine and Nebraska do, as Jacoby noted?
Well, I think that's an interesting thought or idea. We would rather see national popular vote installed so that you don't have the complications of trying to read it congressional district by congressional district. But we would not be opposed to spreading that other system as well.
Ethel at the Capitol. Good morning, Ethel. Please be brief. You're on with Bob.
Hello?
Yes.
I'm just wondering if Common Cause has considered an article published in the November issue of Harper's Magazine. It's called How to Rig an Election, and it points out that our voting machines, those who supply our voting machines, are owned and controlled by prominent members of the far right.
All right. What about that, Bob?
Common Cause has been on that issue for years and years. We first called out the Diebold company that was buying up all of the voting machinery companies around the country. We're very concerned about election machinery that doesn't have a paper trail so that when the elections are close, you can actually open the back of the machine or look at the ballots that have been cast on paper. We were very concerned about the hacking.
297-5633. Our last call for Bob Edgar from Dez in South Downs. Dez, please be brief. You're on with Bob.
Thank you for being on today, Mr. Edgar. I want to ask your comment on a famous quote from Ronald Reagan. And my friends who know me know that when I quote Ronald Reagan, you know we're in trouble. Our very unity has been strengthened by our pluralism. We establish no religion in this country. We command no worship. We mandate no belief, nor will we ever. Church and state are and must remain separate.
All right. What about Ronald Reagan touting separation of church and state?
I have one word for that, and that is amen. I don't agree often with Ronald Reagan, but I think I helped ministers and imams and Jewish rabbis to write a statement after 9/11, and 4,500 religious leaders signed a statement honoring the victims of 9/11, but also saying, let's not become the nation the terrorists think we are, and calling on the nation to recognize the pluralism of our faith traditions. It's a strength of the country. Ronald Reagan understood it. As I said, many of my best friends when I served in Congress were moderate to progressive Republicans who, once elected, served the public interest, and that's what we have to get back to. And I just hope, in closing, that People, if they get hassled about their voting, will go to our election protection hotline, which is 1-866-OUR-VOTE. And if you want to know more about National Popular Vote or about the rigging of voting machinery that was in the last question, just go to commoncause.org, our website. We've got a lot of information there, and hundreds of thousands of our members and supporters are benefited by checking out the details. Let's make sure that everybody votes this year, and let's have a fair and accessible and safe election.
Well, thank you, Congressman Edgar. Always a delight. Thank you.
Very good.
And we're joined in studio now by Carlos Sam. He's Director of Innovative and Specialized Programs in the East Baton Rouge Parish School System. And good morning to you.
Well, good morning.
And
glad to be here.
Of course, Carlos was selected as Principal of the Year. What year? 2001?
2001, yes, sir.
In East Baton Rouge. So he is a man who knows our community, and he knows the education process well, and you're gearing up for a significant occurrence this weekend.
That's correct. EBR Mania. It's an annual event hosted by the school system. It will start at 10 o'clock a.m. and end at 3 p.m. at Mall of Cartana. We're going to highlight many, many students at this event, but basically it's our kickoff for our magnet programs. And so starting on October 22nd through December 14th, the entire community will be invited to participate in our online application period for those individuals who are interested in participating in specialized programs in the East Baton Rouge Parish School System.
Well, the EBR Mania free showcase is tomorrow, 10 to 3 at Cortana Mall. Now, what are the benefits of magnet schools that you are involved with?
Well, there are many benefits. For one, we offer programs that are specialized to meet the needs of the students. And so if a parent is interested in getting their kid involved, let's say in a visual and performing arts program or maybe the Montessori method of teaching, this is an opportunity for them to seek those kinds of programs within the public school system of East Baton Rouge Parish.
Well, applicants who apply for middle and high school programs are required to have a grade point average of what?
Required to have a 2.5 grade point average and maintain that grade point average throughout their tenure at the school, I might add. And they're also required to score proficient on the most recent standardized test scores. So there are some academic requirements that we're looking for.
And tomorrow, if those who are interested show up, should they bring anything with them regarding information?
What they need to do is bring their family and friends. We're going to give away prizes. We'll have an art show. We'll have entertainment throughout the day. And so we just want to have folks spread the word.
Well, each magnet and gifted and talented school is also having an open house for the community during the week, and you're involved with this as well.
Absolutely. Starting Monday, we've asked all of our schools to open their doors to the community. So Monday through Friday of next week, we have a variety of schools, roughly 33 in total, that will have open house events during the school day to share the good news to the citizens of Baton Rouge.
We had a listener who wanted to know about the Great Scholars Academy.
Great Scholars Academy is an umbrella of the gifted program. And so those kids who don't quite make it to the gifted program, they meet the admission criteria. They can participate in Great Scholars 6th through 12th grade. And they can also visit our website at ebrschools.org to learn more information about Great Scholars.
What's your temperature right now, Dr. Sam, on the the situation we have in our schools? Is it getting better in this community?
We're working very hard to get better. Dr. Bernard Taylor, who's our new superintendent here in East Baton Rouge Parish, is corralling us very closely together to make sure that we provide the appropriate services for all of our students and employees to make the school system a better place.
Well, and one of the reasons why the schools in this community are significant and substantial, one of the reasons is because of people like you.
Well, so, I appreciate the comments.
And you'll be out there tomorrow, I'm
absolutely
sure.
All day long.
10 to 3, Saturday, October 20th, Cortana Mall. Where exactly at Cortana?
Cortana Mall, right off of Carnival Airline
well,
in
I know
Florida.
Where, well, I think most of our listeners know where Cortana is, but as far it's a big place.
Yeah, we're going to spread out throughout the whole mall, actually, so you won't miss us.
Okay. Well, good luck, and we look forward to hearing how it goes, and it's always nice to see you.
Thank you for having me on the show.
Congratulations on your great work in this community.
Thank you so much.
And we're joined now by Darlene Adams-Rowland, the Director of Development for Big River Economic and Agriculture Development Alliance. Bretta, and she is involved, of course, with the Red Stick Farmers Market. Good morning to you, Darlene.
Good morning, Jim.
And you've been doing this for a little while.
Yeah, I guess it's about 3.5 years now, coming up on 4 years.
3.5 years, and it's become a staple in our community. No doubt people are really into the farmers market.
We definitely have a loyal following of shoppers every Saturday morning, and so happy to have everyone support us. But we find sometimes that people still don't know the farmers market's down there, so it's always good to come on here and spread the word.
Well, tomorrow, before people head down to Cortana Mall, they can stop by for something called Tailgating Throwdown. What is this?
This is our second annual event, and it's really a fun event. It's downtown, and we have it in conjunction with the farmers market. Actually, tomorrow we'll open the farmers market early at 7 a.m., so you can shop early. But it's going to be right there adjacent in the church parking lot, and we're going to have teams of tailgaters who are going to be cooking on site with ingredients from the farmers market. And they'll make all kinds of dishes, and the public's invited to come purchase a For just $15, you can purchase a bracelet where you can go through and sample all this delicious fare. So it's a pretty neat event, and it's got the local spin.
Okay, so you get started when?
We get started actually with the tasting at 9 a.m., and but we will have Bloody Marys and mimosas for sale all morning for you to enjoy.
And the farmer's market is something that is very special to our community. And you're smiling. I know you're very proud of what's been accomplished over the last few years.
It's really an exciting time at the market. We just continue to grow, but also have some exciting developments on the horizon. Possibility we're going to have, starting in 2013, a new mobile version of the farmers market that will travel to communities that lack access to fresh food. So that's a really exciting development for us in 2013.
And you'll be there, I'm sure, for another year of success. Darlene is one of the major players in this endeavor with the Big River Economic and Agricultural Development Alliance. And your acronym is?
BRETA.
BRETA.
It's a lot easier than the...
How many folks are involved with BRETA?
Well, we have a network of almost 60 local farmers, and then also inside Main Street Market, we add an additional 10 to 30 food artisans and small businesses that make up our network of public markets. So it's a pretty substantial group of people that, you know, really are all focusing on strengthening our local economy and bringing the freshest products to the public every Saturday.
Okay, and for those who'd like to find out more, independent of the events tomorrow at the Tailgating Throwdown, how do they find you?
Go to bretta.org. That's like the word bread with an A on the end. And you can find info on the Tailgating Throwdown tomorrow, which is a great way to support all of our programs and on information on everything else that we offer for the community.
Well, this is a Tailgating Throwdown, even though LSU is on the road at College Station. It's going to be hard to get from the farmer's market to College Station for a morning kickoff. I guess you could tailgate and then watch it or listen
to
it.
Well, actually, we are going to have some TVs on site. Once they change that game time on us, we just embraced it, and we decided to bring some TVs down so you can come and bring a chair, and we'll have live music by the John Gray Jazz Trio, and then the awards right before the game kicks off, and then we'll turn on the TVs, and you can sit back with your Bloody Mary and mimosa and watch the game.
Yeah, that John Gray, he's a talented man, but he's everywhere.
He is. We love having him at the market.
The ubiquitous
makes it festive.
John Gray. Well, thank you, Darlene, and good luck tomorrow.
Thanks so much, Jim.
And come Monday, Kevin Gallagher informs me that one of our guests on the show will be Roger Villery, the chairman of the Louisiana Republican Party. Monday will be the final debate night for President Obama and Governor Romney. Last night, the two exchanged pleasantries at the Al Smith dinner in New York City, and they actually were funny. Kevin, do you have something from last night?
One another.
People seem to be very curious as to how we prepare for the debates. Let me tell you what I do. First, refrain from alcohol for 65 years before the debate. Second, find the biggest available straw man and then just mercilessly attack it. Big Bird didn't even see it coming. And by the way, in the spirit of Sesame Street, the president's remarks tonight are brought to you by the letter O and the number 16 trillion.
All right, and what about the other side, Kevin? Do we have President Obama? Do we have Barack Obama, who I thought was even funnier than Governor Romney, and Romney was pretty funny.
I felt really well rested after the nice long nap I had in the first debate. Now, win or lose, this is my last political campaign, so I'm trying to drink it all in. Unfortunately, Mayor Bloomberg will only let me have 16 ounces of it. But that's okay. I'm still making the most of my time in the city. Earlier today, I went shopping at some stores in Midtown. I understand Governor Romney went shopping for some stores in Midtown.
That was President Obama and Governor Romney last night in New York City. And they got off some pretty good zingers and a little bit of self-deprecating humor, too. And if they exercise more of this in the debates, they might fare a lot better in the eyes and ears of the American public. But Monday night will be the final debate between the two heading to the election on November 6th. And right now it looks like it'll be a close one between the two. Nate Silver says President Obama still has a 65% chance of winning, based on his review of the state-by-state forecast. But the Gallup poll now has Governor Romney ahead by 7 points. So something is going on out there, and it's a hard election to discern at this point. But we'll try to bring some meaning to it as we move along, as we always do on this show and throughout the day on WRKF. Until Monday, for Kevin, I'm Jim. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at WRKF.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.